Hello everyone, and welcome to the Constructive Criticism Network. This network is here to help you improve at Magic the Gathering at every level. From Pauper Leagues to Top 1000 Mythic, we've got you covered. If you want to hear the entire network, head on over to our sponsor at PureMTGO.com, where you can hear each and every show, each and every week, and check out their sponsor, MTGO Traders, and tell them that the CCMTG Network sent you. Now sit back, enjoy the show. From YouTube, podcasts, and more, here's this week's episode from ConstructiveCriticism.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 323rd episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Mason, and I'm joined by Allie. Allie, how you doing?
That's a lot of episodes.
It's so hard to believe, right? Like, this show, when Spencer started it, I think it was, like, right before Theros was released, is what I want to say. I think Theros was the first set review, at least. So it's been around. Eight. Yeah. It's an old one. Do you know where, like, about 97 away from a meme? If we had just got those in the past, today would have been the perfect day.
Ooh, so close.
Missed opportunity.
But I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Living my best quarantine life. I got to play a Magic tournament yesterday, which is always nice, you know, and just kind of vibing today. So it's pretty good.
Love to play Magic tournaments.
Well, luckily we both got to play one, so we get to talk about that. And we get to talk about this sweet new standard format that is fun for now. I guess we'll get more into that later.
But
Allie, what was your always improving moment this week?
I think it actually does have to do with the tournament. Mm-hmm. I think it has been like every time we've hosted this podcast, but for this tournament I was, as always, not sure what to play, switching around decks a lot, because I think one of my strengths is just kind of being able to pick up a deck and play it. And my always improving part of that was just being able to identify that I think I played Temur Flash with Wilderness Reclamation. I was able to identify that that was really strong against what I thought a lot of the people were going to bring to the event. And ended up being correct, I think. Like, I think a lot of Temur Rec decks got into, like, there were two in top eight and like a handful in the top 16. So even though I went 6-3, I still think the deck was the correct choice. Maybe if I had played more than one match of it before the event, I would have done better than 6-3, but.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah, I think flash decks were definitely the way to go for this event. Despite seeing Lurrus be such a, you know, dominant force in top eight, as we'll talk about later in this episode. But yeah, I mean, I played mono blue. I didn't expect people to pick up on Lurrus so quickly and actually have good builds. Like, my hot take is that Croaky's deck is like unplayably bad. And then people were just like, what if we took all those bad cards out and put reasonable ones in, like, very quickly and had good sideboard plans? I was like, well, I didn't want this to happen. But yeah, I definitely think the Temur Rec deck was like a good choice. And there's also like a lot of ways to build it right now, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah. Oh, we can definitely go into, like, more of the, like, objective talking about the deck later in the podcast. But that was definitely my always improving.
Awesome. Well, my always improving moment this week was definitely figuring out sideboard plans and stuff like that and kind of working on that whole process. It's something that, you know, you always need to evaluate. And it's so hard in early formats, too, because it's like, okay, I have a general idea of what these shells look like, but it's really hard to kind of know, like, what the other people are going to do, and especially for you. And when you're playing a deck that's, like, not very popular, like, I decided to play Mono Blue, which we'll talk about more later. That's a deck that, like, no one was really talking about, right? Like, if it was a flash deck, everyone said, oh, you have to play Demir, you have to play Demir. And so I was kind of, like, trying to think about what other people do for me and working on that whole process. And I think I came to, like, a pretty good place, all things considered, on that. And so it was just kind of good to work on that skill.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of, like, my biggest weaknesses that I definitely still need to work on is, like, overarching, like, sideboarding in general. So, it's definitely a great place to start improving.
Sideboarding is so hard, and you always have to be, like, it's very dynamic and fluid, too, you know? I think before the London Mulligan, the Mulligan was the hardest part of Magic, but now this, I think, sideboarding is. It's rough.
My hot take on the London Mulligan is that it has, like, just at a base level, just, like, fundamentally changed what Magic is, and I think we're still learning a lot of new stuff with the London Mulligan that it just isn't in the forefront of people's minds. Like, I mean, I think, like, obviously mulliganing is completely different, but like also playing the game is completely different, sideboarding is completely different, and just like how companions are interacting with this new standard is completely different than it would be if we still had the Vancouver mulligan.
I agree with that 100%. I think that, yeah, it's changing things and we're seeing it. Like, I talked to you about this off air. I was talking to someone about this a week or so ago, but I was talking about how, like, Magic decks, when I first started playing, didn't have, like, as many lands as we're playing with all our decks now. And we have a lot of pretty big payoffs now, but I think another part of that's, like, you can just mulligan and keep, like, a pretty low land hand, and if your deck, like, has a reasonable curve, you know, like, even aggro decks, I feel like, have, like, a higher land count than they used to. So, like, we saw Seth Manfield play, like, 23 or 24, you know? Just a totally different game. This has huge ramifications.
I've just been copy-pasting, like, Fires decks in old standard, because mm-hmm. it was, like, close to the end of the format. I'm like, all right, Fires is solved, whatever. And then, like, I finally looked one time, and the deck had 27 lands. That blew my mind. I'm like, I don't remember the last time I've played, like, a 27-land deck or, like, been conceptually aware of it.
Yeah, for sure. The newer ones that aren't playing 80-card decks, the 60-card versions, some are playing 29 to 30 lands is the average. It's just, like, an ungodly amount of lands. Yeah. It's, like, more than Amulet plays. It's just, it's not reasonable. Well, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg, and you can get your question read, just like this week's question. I had this one DM'd to me, and I think it was actually maybe brought up because of your tweet, or your tweet was part of this, Allie, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, but we got the message of, I've seen a lot of questions about open decklists today on Twitter, and I was wondering what your opinion of open decklists are at GPs and SCGs post the corona and everything. And so, yeah, so Pro Tours, if you didn't know, they've been using an open deck list type thing where the main deck is completely open, and then the sideboard just kind of listed the cards, and then now the online GPs, or Magic Fest, sorry, have been doing completely open deck lists. And Allie, what are your thoughts on all of this?
I personally like it a lot, and I mean, like, I can dive into, like, both pros and cons of it, actually. I think it, for a con, does really kind of like decentivize like brewing and stuff. Mm-hmm. If you're coming to a tournament looking to like kind of get the meta per se with like mill, everyone's going to know what you're doing from the moment you sit down, or just any kind of like brew or like weird six sideboard tech or something like that, like that's kind of just exposed, so you're not really incentivized to really brew so much, just play a known good deck or something like that, unless you're like very confident that you like broke the meta or something. Mm-hmm. But I think overall there's more pros than cons. I mean, a lot of what I'm going to say is probably like a privileged position of being like someone known in the community, being on camera matches, being on feature matches, etc. So like after about like round two or three, like, or even like on like my Patreon or stuff, like I am giving free information into the world, but like pretty much everyone knows what I'm playing by the time like where tournament match wins matter. So I'm at a disadvantage because if I'm not playing against someone I know, I don't know what they're playing against, or what I'm playing against, like, what they're playing. So, I mean, like, I've definitely, even, like, Emma Handy at the Invitational, someone turn one Pithing Needle on the play against her and just named Ink Moth Nexus, and she sat there with a handful of Ink Moth Nexuses, like, well, okay.
That's, yeah, that is an interesting side effect of it all.
I mean, also, if we look at, like, smaller tournaments too, if we're looking at just like IQs and stuff, like I might be the only woman in the room, or like if someone else is the only like POC in the room, or like something like that, it also hurts kind of those minority groups of like, oh, the woman is playing Jund, so then everyone knows in the room that the one woman there is playing Jund.
yeah like, yeah, I lost even like if they just say it kind of like in a like non, you know, just like a way, they're like, yeah, I played against the lady last round and she like, you know, turn two Tarmogoyf me, turn three Liliana me, and it's like, well, if you're the only one there, you know, or etc. So
that if someone's talking about some random like a white guy stormed off turn three, well, that's like the whole room. I'm not going to get any information out of that.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah, I think it's so awkward because I definitely acknowledge that those things are true, right? But I almost, I don't know, maybe it's just like I'm holding on to the past too much. But I do think that you brought up a good point on the negative that, like, it, you're saying, like, it makes it harder to attack or to, like, bring a brew or something like that. And I think it almost disincentivizes you drastically too, right? Because, well, assuming that yours has an element of surprise to it, right? Like, if you were playing, like, a brewery mid-range deck, it probably doesn't matter that they know your deck has, you know, let's say 4 Jeskai charms, right? Like, if you were a Jeskai mid-range deck, they could figure that out. I do think that that is a kind of a big part of the game to some people that you and I don't normally interact with. You know, and that's kind of my worry there is that, like, those aren't people that I super interact with or that I even, like, relate to, but I know exist, are, like, people who want to bring these weird things and surprise people and do stuff like that. And I don't know. I would, if there was a clean and easy way to do it, like, everyone had an app on their phone, which is obviously, like, a super privileged take, right, that we can all have an app that updated, or just something, it would be nice to have it go that way. But I don't know. I wish there was just a way to fix it, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's almost like this, like, having open deck lists might be the, there's obviously problems, but it might make it the most, like, even playing ground against people. Because, I mean, like, even people that I don't know, if I, like, I check out the feature matches in between rounds. Like, I look at them. If I happen to get paired against that person and they don't know me, like, I'm going to know what hands to mulligan or, like, what to do game one. And they'll be, like, in the dark. So, I don't know. Maybe if there's, like, a way to do, like, more high-stakes tournaments, which they already do, is, like, the PTs have open deck lists. These weekend championships have open deck lists. I think that's more along, like, lines of, like, streaming and stuff.
Yeah. I always thought that was because of coverage for the PTs, but maybe it was maybe I'm misremembering that.
Oh, for the PTs, there used to be teams that were very popular and would scout the entire room, so they would know literally what everyone in the room was playing.
That's right. I forgot about scouting teams.
So, I mean, like, I think it's probably the most, like, fair way to do things. Maybe there's a world where, like, events that queue for the players tour can have open deck lists because maybe that's, like, higher stakes. You want everyone to be, like, completely even. Maybe for, like, IQs, though, like, it's fine to not have open deck lists.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I kind of like that approach to it where it's like, all right, if we've deemed this, like, a class A tournament, you know, for lack of a better word or term, then it's going to be open deck list. But, you know, if you're going to do, like, a local thing, even, like, a regionals, you know, it's just not worth the hassle, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah.
It's a very interesting, I don't know, I clearly don't have, like, well thought out views on this, but I definitely get your points and you're definitely swaying me more towards it too, especially the more I think about, like, the, you know, just the minority thing, not even, like, the weird take and, like, you know, of being someone who's known in Magic. Like, I've had that happen to me, actually, where, like, round 15 of SCG Knoxville, I was playing Urza, but my opponent had known me for playing Amulet Titan. And so, like, they made a decision thinking I was Amulet Titan. And so when I played my cards, they were like, wait, you're not playing Amulet. And I was like, I'm not smart enough to play that deck against Oko. Sorry. And so, like, you know, like,
I can definitely go the other way.
Yeah. I don't mean to use that as an example against you. I meant more like I was kind of thinking in the moment there of, like, that is something that does happen. I could see how that, you know. And I'm, like, nobody. So, yeah, you know, I can't imagine being you. But, yeah, that is that's wild. I wonder what it's like to be someone like Caleb Shure, who's just always Storm. He, like, never tries to pivot, never does anything. His brand is the Storm guy. Like, I would love to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's obviously, like, another, like, strike against, like, doing open deck lists is, like, people like Caleb just kind of prove that it doesn't really matter sometimes. Sometimes you're just, like, good enough to fight through all of, like, people knowing literally everything you're doing.
Yeah, they have it all. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I'm curious to see what will happen because I know that conversation's been going around, and maybe, you know, maybe that's just the way things will be in the future. Who knows? Thank you so much for that question. Like we said, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg if you want to become a patron of the show. The show will always be free, but if you want to give back, we try to give back to you in little ways, and being able to ask a question on the show is a way to give back. Another way to help the show, if maybe you're trying to get some Magic cards, is you can go to Oasis Games, and you can use code CCMTG for 4% off every order, and you can use code WouldThatBeGood for 15% off your first order. pick up some cards, maybe get some, well, maybe don't buy Lurus's. I don't know. I'm a little hesitant. I can't in good faith tell you to buy Lurus, but I can in good faith tell you to buy some Karugas. I think they're safe. So, but yeah, that's a way to help support the show as well. Allie, it's week one standard time. Are you so excited?
This past weekend was wild. I don't know.
It really was crazy. So I kind of want to talk about everything leading up to where we are now before we kind of talk about where we think the format's at. What was your kind of format after, let's say going into Friday night, right? Like, we had 2 days with the set on Arena, you know, Garunda's everywhere. What were you thinking about the format?
I was thinking, like, Gerudo was actually a decent deck. Like, I think I had mostly just played Garuda decks up until the deck registration, honestly. Of just, like, Emma spent a long time making a Garuda deck. I spent a long time just, like, testing all those different variations of the deck as well. And then I think it was, like, the day before, I, like, switched between, like, three different decks that I thought I was going to register, and then ended up registering a deck that I hadn't really played, but I knew conceptually was really good against what I'd been seeing in Standard, and I think it, like, worked out pretty well for me. But
yeah, I think it was obviously, like, a good choice, right? Like, Dylan made top 8. There was another Flash player, Zach Allen 6-2 as well. There was another Rec player in there, so, like, clearly Rec was, like, you know, like, a good choice and, like, a good audible, especially with considering how the Garinda decks played out. My take on the Garinda decks was I thought that they would see play at this tournament. I thought the ones that would do well would be ones that, like, actually adapted and played things like Essence Scatter or Shatter the Sky or Blast Zones as a way to, like, actually interact with people, because I realized the deck couldn't beat, like, any amount of hate in its current build. And so I gave up on that and moved to Flash. And then, wow, the tournament was just dominated by Lurus, kind of skipping ahead to where we are now in the current metagame. Did you expect so much Lurus going into the tournament, and what do you think about it now, like, post tournament?
I definitely expect it. Like, I think I was expecting Lurus decks and Garuda decks. That's kind of just what I was aiming to beat with my teamer rec, teamer flash meta decision, I guess. So I actually did expect it. For a long time, for the early access streamer event, I was trying to make, like, the best Recto Sacrifice deck or Mardu Aristocrats deck, and I think I got close. I think Robert Stanley, who ended up doing that Orzhov Aristocrats deck, is a very good, like, deck builder, so I think he nailed it on the head. I think a lot of the other, like, Rakdos versions of Lurus was not very good, kind of, like, easily beatable if you were expecting it. If you weren't, like, you just kind of ran over people.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's probably worth mentioning, just in case people don't know, about the top 8 of that event was 4 Rakdos Lurus decks, 1 Orzhov Rakdos, I'm sorry, 1 Orzhov Sack deck, the Lurus one, who was Robert Stanley, who won the event and actually went undefeated all day. I believe he went 12-0. 1 Jeskai Fires, and then 2 Teemer Rex. And one was both are Flash variants, sorry. Instead of the, like, Niv-Mizzet one we kind of saw floating around a little bit. So with that in mind, yeah, I like I mentioned earlier in the show, I thought the Lurus decks weren't playable, like, in the form that Croaky was promoting. And it was kind of just a hint that, like, all right, Lurus is probably good if you can play all of this terrible Magic cards. I mean, like, the Scorpion is, like, not a playable card. Even in, like, you know, even when you get the Scorpion on the buyback, the one that, the, like, drains for 2 when it dies, that's just not it in any form. So, you know, that was scary, but I didn't expect for people to adapt so quickly. And these Lurus decks have some real power to them. And even, like, I think the good thing about the Orzhov one in particular is that even when you answer Lurus, it still kind of has some game.
Yeah, I definitely made the mistake in my early builds of the deck by not including, forgot the name of the card, but the card that brings back creatures from the graveyard, a total CMC of 3. So that just brings back, like, multiple creatures from these decks. And
it's called the Dark Dweller.
Yeah. gets like death touch and menace counters or something.
Yeah.
That one is very good. You can even just like bring back Lurrus too if you want.
Yeah, it kind of acts like most of the decks are playing three, and yeah, I kind of saw them as Lurrus 2 through 4. You know, if you always have a Lurrus, then your Dark Dweller, unless your Lurrus gets exiled, is just that. So easier to cast too, just a black.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the Lurrus decks, so it's interesting, right? So like right now, if you play ladder, everyone is playing decks that like try to beat Lurrus or are Lurrus decks. Like I've been playing like Rakdos Sec, kind of updated, but like basically I took Ash Lizzle's deck from the top 8 and then changed it for a couple of new cards, and I put some Lurruses in over Midnight Reaper so I could like always draw a creature basically. That has been performing really well against other Lurrus decks, so they seem really beatable, but like you said, like if you don't come prepared for these decks, they're not beatable. They're so resilient. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, they're all like really good week one decks as well, because everyone's trying to do these like fun things with all these like cool cards. But even like some of the decks that are really good, like I think Jeskai Fires was still really good, but a lot of the builds are still really clunky, trying to figure out like exact numbers, how to put in or incorporate the triomes in the deck and stuff like that. So it's just kind of like everyone's messing with a bunch of numbers and not exactly sure what the best build is, because of course it's week one, who has 80 hours to test in a week when you're trying to test like literally everything. So I think these really aggressive strategies definitely paid off for being a week one event. I know handful of people did like decent with like mono red too, not like top 8, but like just like these decks that punish all these decks trying to do something slower or don't have the best build yet.
Yeah, totally. I think it's interesting too, because it's like, all right, Fires made top 8, it's obviously only one, but I think like traditional Fires is actually just good against those Rakdos and or the Lurrus decks in general, you know, like powerful creatures, quick clock that closes the game, some staying power with Kinrith, and then like board clears, you know, in the form of Definite Clarion, just like actually seems good. And it seems like once they figure that out, they're going to kind of push the Lurrus decks down. I'm just going to kind of talk about it because we're kind of talking around it, because I'm mentioning Lurrus and I'm going to bring Garuda up here in a minute, or Garunda, how you say it. Do you think these things need to get banned? Because that is like all that everyone is saying right now, is that these things have to go.
I think it's way too early to tell in standard. Mm-hmm. I think if we look towards more eternal formats, something of some extent likely has to be done. It's just fundamentally shaping how we're looking at like Pioneer, Modern, Legacy, Vintage. Mm-hmm. Like Lurrus is a presence in all of those formats pretty much, and kind of just doing like broken things, producing like turn 2-3 kills or whatever, and that's kind of against a lot of Magic philosophy. And I've actually heard like a lot of different ways to kind of deal with I guess the companion problem, if we're calling it a problem. Mm-hmm. Which isn't just like straight out like banning them or something. One's like just adjust like what companion actually does. Another being, I think Ricky Hayashi came up with something where if you have a companion, you have to have like an opening hand of 6 instead of 7, since it's effectively like being your 7th card or something.
Sure. Yeah, that seems reasonable too. Isn't that also how they originally playtested these? Like, oh, there's like the Mara article that came out that during Tempest they tried this kind of thing, and that's what they did actually. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Okay, so basically
maybe that's where Ricky like drew from with maybe that.
Yeah, but originally, apparently, as the story goes, Maro tested something that's very similar to companion, and you would just have a 6 card hand, and then you always drew like your Squee the companion, for example. And so they were like very weak though, but you like always had your Squee card. And then they determined that wasn't fun, that was a good for Magic, and here we are. And so yeah, I don't think they should be banned, but I do think we should take a second there to talk about it. Because I'd like to move on from the Lurrus decks. I think the interesting thing to kind of note is the Lurrus decks, while definitely have some more room to probably refine, have in a weird way sort of reached what seems to be like their end build for what's currently happening, right? And that happens so quickly, and I find it hard to believe that that's actually the best thing to be doing in the format. Or if it's the best thing that it's not attackable, right, from all these other decks. Like, I think Fires can have a good game against it. I think Teamer Flash can have a good game against it, as shown like by you and Dylan. I think you could like build Mono Red in a way to race it. So like I just don't believe that like we should be spending all our time talking about Lurrus decks, because I just think they are beatable and like have a clear set of rules and are not this like unsurmountable presence. In a very similar way to Garinda, I think the Garinda deck is actually not playable. Like, it is just a clunky deck that tries to slam the 6-drop that, admittedly, you always have the 6-drop, which is nice for when you're trying to build a combo deck. But if your opponents come prepared in any way, then you really, really suffer. I think a clear problem for those cards, for Lurrus and Garinda, is that Grafdigger's Cage is in the format. And Grafdigger's Cage stops both of them. So you're incentivized, and Grafdigger's Cage is colorless, obviously, you're incentivized to put that in all of your decks, right? Like, you need to have, like, 2 or 3 of those. And that's actually just a hard way to cut off the Lurrus deck from being a real thing if you're a grindy deck. And then the Garinda decks can't combo kill you most of the time without drawing one of their sideboard cards. And if they're doing that, they're not killing you on turn, you know, 4 like they were before, so it's more manageable. So, yeah, I think those things are, like, week one stuff, and I'd love to move past it. Do you disagree with that fundamentally, Allie? Were you with me?
No, I agree. I think, especially if we're looking at solely Standard, I think Standard, because of the limited card pool, is extremely self-correcting. Mm-hmm. I am, for the most part, like, really against Standard bans across the board. There's so rarely a time where I think one card is so overpowered that the format will not correct itself. I think, like, we see cards like Oko, like, yeah, sure, like...
Yeah, that one's clearly
that one overtook the entire format. But like, if we like just like historically look at other cards that have been banned, it's like it almost feels like it's just been too soon, because mm-hmm. even we look back at like everything that we've thought should be banned. Like, people, as soon as like Oka was banned, were screaming like, "Oh, Fires is it? Fires needs to be banned." We're like, "Yeah, Fires." It's a pretty, like, absurd card, but we saw, like, the week before Ikoria released, like, Fires really wasn't doing anything anymore because it corrected for Bant to be the best deck, and Fires couldn't beat Bant. So, like, I just think, I don't know, calling for bans week one in the Standard, which is pretty much a self-correcting format, is a little egregious, because I think it's, like, the format's just going, people are going to figure it out. People are going to figure out how to not lose to Lurrus, and less people will play Lurrus because they'll be playing the deck that beats Lurrus, and then it'll just kind of keep resolving itself from there.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. Like, I basically, you know, I sign off on everything you just said there for the most part. It's so funny too, because it's like, we have this weird habit now where it's like, we should complain about things and get them banned, because maybe they're too strong compared to Magic as we knew it before. But that's, like, not a fair comparison. Like, this is now, not then, right? And we need to talk about things now. And what's happened is, because people have called for bans so much, it's, like, desensitized people, right? They're like, oh, there's just Magic players being Magic players calling for bans. And so that when things do get really messed up, like Oko, I feel like, you know, if I worked at WotC, that'd be so much harder to listen to the player base. It's like, well, I want to trust you guys and I want to listen to you all, but you tell me to ban every card. Like, I don't know what to do, you know? So
I had this like tweet, I think in like January. I was like really sick all of January, so it was probably just like a fever tweet, but it was something just like, I just think everyone has this like fake nostalgia for, I was referring to Modern, but has this fake nostalgia of a format that never really existed. They just had this like idea in their mind that this is what Magic should be. And like, maybe we can apply that to Standard too, of like, maybe like say a nostalgia for Siege Rhino. Like, that was the most broken thing like years ago. So people are like remembering that. So it's like, oh, we have to like ban everything until it's similar to that. But mm-hmm. I mean, like, people also hated that format too. Like, people are never going to be happy. I don't know. I personally just keep playing Magic. I'm fine with like complaining about things that annoy you. I complain about Flash all the time because it's annoying, but I'm going to keep playing Magic, and I think we need to wait more than a week than to call for bans.
I am 100% with you. I agree with all that. let's move on for the sake of the listeners and talk about how we're going to beat these decks, because I think there are a lot of easy ways to do it, and I want to kind of promote this culture of attacking something and working on it, and then our last resort being, you know, going to Twitter and say, please ban. I love to meme. You know, I love a good meme tweet every now and again, but we got to actually do the work on this kind of stuff. So, unfortunately, I say all that to say, if Garunda was the deck people were still playing, I think my mono blue deck is actually just the best deck in the format. But the problem is there's Lurrus, so we have to move on from those decks, sadly. What do you think about the Teemer decks going forward? Because this seems like, right, Cavaliers and Teemer Flash seem like the decks.
I was fairly happy with the Teemer Flash. The matchup with, like, the Lurrus decks felt really close. When I was playing, I think I played them twice, and I was, like, 1-1. But, I mean, I played against, like, Harlan Fear, so I'm not just playing against, like, random people. Like, I beat Harlan, so I don't know.
The Lotus Box tournaments are stacked. I just want to, like, if you're looking for a competitive outlet, like, you should play the Lotus Box events. Like, I played, my only losses in the tournament were to Abe Stein and Abe Corrigan, who are just, like, two great players. I played against, Abby Rose, and I've played against two other people I definitely know that were good players. Just, like, five of my four rounds were just against stacked opponents. And my round one opponent was against Anna Madison, who's quite good. She just no-showed. So technically it was six, you know? So, like, these are stacks. Sorry, so keep going. If you're looking for stacked tournaments, I would suggest those.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it was definitely, like, terrifying to play against these decks. I feel like, I mean, you can obviously just, like, ramp up the sideboard, play more Grafdigger's Cage, play more Flame Sweep, more even just, like, smaller removal spells too if we're expecting mostly Lurrus. And then I think the aspect of Teemer Flash against Lurrus was actually just kind of like going really hard in removal and then the combo. So just like make sure you don't die and then expansion explosion them very quickly.
Yeah, I think I like that approach a lot. And it seems like it's pretty clear too, right? Like it's, you know, you don't have to go through a lot of hoops to get there.
Yeah, like maybe go up Uros for life gain, I guess. Even if you can't cast the back end, if you have a Grafdigger's Cage out, you still, like, sometimes that three life is good enough to get you to that last turn.
Yeah, like cycling, advance your mana a little bit, you know. It's kind of a nombo, but also, like, if you, you know, resolve the Grafdigger's Cage, it's okay to turn off the back half of your Uro because you turn off their deck.
yeah, exactly.
And if they don't, you have an Uro, so, like, oh no.
Yeah. So I think there's definitely potential to more, like, streamline the deck so it goes from, like, maybe 50-50 to slightly favored. Sideboard is, like, pretty versatile, so I feel good moving forward if you want to take the Teemer Flash route.
Yeah, that seems good. What do you think about these Fires decks? We have seen a lot of them. I forget the name now. I believe it's Yorin, but the 80-card companion. We've seen Fires decks playing that. We've seen Fires decks playing weird setups, and we've seen like the more cavalier ones. I kind of mentioned it earlier. Seemed like a good way to attack the Lurrus decks. Also a good way to attack the Garunda decks if you're still somehow running into that pile. What do you think about those decks? Because that's also a deck that, you know, traditionally in the past has been, you know, a tier, like, tier one, like, very safe, solid deck to play.
Yeah, I definitely think Jeskai Fire's still really good. I think it's sometimes the Lurrus decks can just kind of go under you. So maybe just, again, looking at some more sideboard cards, maybe you do have to play, like, say, Grafdigger's Cage or something, and you have to not reveal your Karuga postboard. Like, that's a consideration, finding something that gains you more life if you really need to. Like, I think my overall point here is just, like, a lot of these decks can afford to just dig heavier in the sideboard to combat Lurrus strategies.
Yeah, for sure.
I think the Yorion Fires deck cannot beat this Lurrus deck. I don't know. The deck is really cool. It just seems super clunky, and by the time you do anything, you're dead.
Yeah, for sure. I think the deck has some very powerful draws to it, right? Like, the Yorion is just, like, kind of an insanely powerful card, but it asks so much of you. You're just kind of like, well, if we want to do that kind of stuff, can we just play Yorion in our Fires decks? You know, do we have to like, you don't have it all the time, but then you also have the rest of your cards, including your fires, more often, right? You don't have that 20 extra cards hiding your fires from you. You always lost the fires before because you couldn't get your fires. Just a wild, wild deck choice.
Yeah, I mean, like, I saw, like, Zan playing it this weekend, so I took his deck and ran it on ladder for, like, 3 matches, I think, this morning. And against the non-Lurrus decks, like, you kind of just manage to go off, like, which is fun and stuff, but I just don't think it has enough, like, interaction or even, like, percentage, because you have 80 cards in your deck, the, like, proper percentage to get the cards you need to even stabilize in that matchup.
Yeah, they just go down by so much. It's kind of wild. All right, I'm going to ask you, have you seen the Moth deck, the white-black combo deck?
Is that something, like, similar to what Ash Lizzle's been playing?
Yeah, so it's her deck, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw her post on Twitter yesterday. I actually, like, really liked it. She, like, posted her list, and she's like, the typical Lurrus deck suck. You want this in your main deck. And I'm like, yeah. It's just, like, I agree with it. It's much more of a resilient build. People are going to figure out how to beat a hyper-aggressive deck. Like, Mono Red last standard was not overpowered or the best deck. Like, people can figure out how to beat the aggro deck. So I think if people can actually figure that out again, I like looking into just, like, the bigger build of this, like, Orzhov Sacrifice deck, because I think the 3-drops are very important. I think she said something similar as well. Is, yeah, like, the deck isn't worth playing without the 3-drops.
Yeah, I believe what Ash said was, like, the sac the Rakdos and Orzhov both need their 3-drops to be playable decks, basically. And you're allowed to play Lurrus as, like, just a card in your deck. Like, you don't have to, like, make your deck bad just to have Lurrus. And I've taken that approach to Rakdos, and it has been, I mean, it's a super small size, but I'm, like, 8-0 on ladder right now playing against decks. Just, like, oh, instead of Midnight Reaper, I have Lurrus, so I always draw my Priest, or I always draw my Dreadhorde Butcher, you know? And it's like, okay, this is, like, super powerful. It also makes your deck more consistent in a weird way. Like, before, you would sack stuff to Priest, and then, like, you would get random cards, and sometimes you would Flood, but now I just, like, sack my Butcher every time, you know? And so it's a different dynamic to the deck, and I think more powerful. Also, you know, 3-2 lifelink, it's quite good against the other Lurrus decks. You just kind of trade and gain some life back. It's a wild. But yeah, in case someone's curious about that deck, basically you just have, like, the Moth and then a sack engine, and then it's like basically Aristocrats, but instead of having a grindy aspect, it's a combo aspect with the Moth eventually. What do you think, this is a kind of winding down here our standard talk, what do you think about Nissa, Hydra, Krasis, Uro? Because, you know, we mentioned Uro in the Team of Reclamation deck, but those cards, like, were defining the format alongside the sack cards. And we've kind of touched on what we think we should do with sack. Where are those cards? I haven't seen them in, like, a week. I'm glad I'm not seeing them. I've got a little bored playing against them. But, like, those cards are so strong. Where are they?
I mean, I think, like, a lot of those cards were kind of just, like, the highlight of the Bant deck. And the Bant deck was obviously the best deck going into the last week of Standard. And I do think, like, one, people are just interested in playing the new cards. I think this aggressive Lurrus deck is really good, but, like, beating the Bant deck as well. I think there's still room in the format for those cards. They just have to change their deck, honestly. And not to harp on the ban talk again, but, like, that's just another example of people wanted, like, the entire Bant deck banned, and now we didn't even see it at all this weekend.
Yeah, Nissa, there was, 4 months ago, it was, like, ban Nissa was the conversation.
I mean, like, I'm sick of Nissa too, but, like,
yeah,
whatever.
it's a 5-mana planeswalker, you know, like, you can interact with that. Even if it gives you a super powerful turn 6 or, you know, 5, whatever, because of Growth Spiral or row, it's still beatable. As shown by time. that kind of does it for me on Standard. Before we go, I want to ask you, what would you play, Allie, in Standard right now?
That's a good question. I'm still kind of hoping I can figure out what to do with either Rexac, Orzhov Sack, or Maru sacrifice slash aristocrats for all of that. I think there's something really powerful there, and I just need the numbers to work well with each other. This would just be with, like, Luris in the actual deck, not as a companion. I also think just, like, Team Erek is a good choice as well.
Yeah, I think I'm on Rakdos Sack right now. I think it's just very, it's just, like, kind of a better Luris deck in the head-to-head, and everyone's playing that. So, you know, until people adapt, I'm kind of just down to, you know, play Mayhem Devil, play the new Bastion, drain people out. It's a wild time. I actually played against a Mardu Aristocrats deck yesterday in round 8 of the Lotus Box event, and it was kind of interesting. They kind of just were playing old Rakdos Sack, but with Moth. So, kind of a different approach than how I've seen some people do it. So, a lot of to be discovered, a lot to talk about in the coming weeks. Standard, I think, is fun right now. I am hopeful that the companions don't ruin that and it doesn't come too repetitive, but it is. It's a fun time.
Yeah, I've been enjoying Standard. A little frustrated, just trying to figure out what is actually good and what's not good, but I mean, it's week one. We have forever weeks to go.
Yeah, for sure. The early weeks of the format are kind of always like that, and that's also kind of part of the fun, right? It's like, oh, dang, I really think that, you know, this Garinda deck is the best thing to be doing. I think this Laura deck, and then like seeing how other people choose to attack that and change it. It's one of the more exciting parts of Magic in my mind.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
Yep. Well, Allie, if someone wanted to find you, where could they go?
You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv, there we go, /mythic_mebo, and you can find me on Twitter at mythicmebo, no underscore.
You can find me on Twitter at Mason E. Clark, and you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheMasonClark. Allie, thanks for coming by to talk some Standard with me again. Hopefully, we're going to talk about some more exciting stuff next week. Hopefully, the format's totally different, and we have to do the whole show over again, and everything goes wrong. That'd be so exciting.
I'm sure it will be. Like, I think people are going to figure some stuff out. I just really hope that Eternal Formats can kind of figure things out, because it's been kind of rough looking at some screenshots of what's been going on in Eternal Formats. But love me some Standard.
Yeah, I love Standard. And those Eternal... Let's take a moment to talk about that, I guess, real quick before we wrap up here. That is wild town. Like, companions have completely broken Eternal Formats.
I mean, we already know that, like, Vintage kind of sucks.
Yeah, Vintage is in the format. That doesn't
in
count.
A way, like, I love Vintage. So, like, when I say it sucks, I mean, like, it's just kind of, like, overpowered or whatever. But, like, that's the point, and I love it. But now you can just go, like, oh, Black Lotus into Luris, play Black Lotus again, crack it for blue this time, Time Walk, Ancestral Recall.
Yeah.
That's a turn one play you can have. So, off that, I think the issue with Luris and some Eternal formats is just some, like, bad gameplay of just, like, gameplay I specifically don't like Cheerios-esque in every format. Not a huge fan of that.
Yeah, I don't like it. In, like, formats like Legacy, right? Like, there is always this kind of feeling in your head that maybe I should be playing, like, the Force of Will Chalice-type deck to check people. But you don't always have to play that, you know? And you could play the combo decks. You could also, like, take some more weirder approaches to things, right? You could play, like, pile decks, like these four-color just value things. And it feels like now the way that this is kind of broken, it's like you have to either be the all-in combo player or the all-in hate player, and in between will not suffice. And I don't think that's super healthy.
Burn playing Mishra's Bauble is not okay.
Yeah, that is wild that it looks like one of the best modern decks is just Bauble Burn. It's just like, wait, what? What a time to be alive. It's such a crazy format. It's so wild. Maybe we're talking about that next week. Maybe we won't. Maybe this is super lame. We'll have to figure that out when the time comes. But that was your Legacy Minute. Thank you, everyone, so much for hanging out, and we'll see you all next week for another episode of Constructed Criticism.